Kierrielle is known for her social presence. She is known for the images that she posts, the shoots that she has. Like, everything is so polished, so curated. And I think that's what caught the eye first. Her music is also incredible, but it's like she has this, she's all about space. And her Instagram is just like, it's so beautiful if you go through it. And it's been beautiful since she's been posting. So I think, like, for people in general, we are such a visual kind of culture. And I think that if one, your socials don't align with like what your music sounds like, people are less likely to listen to your music, period. Because it's like all of your images, all of your videos, any media is what's going to be like, it's what's going to make people convinced to even go to your Spotify. Because since, like, well, at least I'd say for the last 10 years, like, people selling music is so hard. It's always been hard, but it's like trying to convince someone to listen to your record. It's just like, why should I listen to this record? Why should I listen to any songs that you put out until I see what you are, you know, until I'm really convinced.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com. What's going on? Welcome to The New Music Business. I'm your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business, the book. Today, my guest is Felicia Bennett. She is an artist manager, formerly a tour manager. She now manages Tenariel, the breakout R&B artist. This last year, they've had an incredible year. Tenariel toured with Ari Lennox over Europe. She had a massive sync in Insecure, which propelled her song to number one on the Shazam charts. She was the December 2020 Playmate of Playboy. She's also an actress and starred in Victoria Monet's music video, latest music video. At the start of the pandemic, they did an amazing virtual live concert for Triller Fest. You should go check that out on YouTube. It was done so well, one of the best live streams out there. And Tenariel was also part of Rihanna's Savage X Fenty lingerie line. As a model, she has a very diverse career with many different facets. And I dig in with Felicia on how all that happened and how they're making it work and how they've planned out the trajectory of this very interesting, very diverse career with so many moving parts, and really understanding what it takes to manage an artist like this and why she took the job in the first place. They've been together about a year now and have accomplished really incredible things, and Tenariel is well on her way. As always, like, follow, subscribe to this. However you're listening to this right now, please pause it, subscribe, hit that follow button, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. At the very least, that would be amazing. If you're listening on YouTube, please just comment real quick. Find me at Ari Herstand on Instagram and Twitter. You can find all of us who put the show together at Ari's Take on Instagram, Twitter, and now TikTok. You can also find me on Clubhouse at Ari Herstand. Visit ariestake.com and sign up on that email list. That is where you're going to get all the most recent information about everything we do, but also, more importantly, why you would care is all the most important things happening in the new music business I send out in the email blast, and you should definitely be up on that. All right, let's kick into the show. Felicia Bennett, welcome to the show. First off, I guess the headlines of what we're going to mostly talk about, and then we're going to go wherever. But so you're Tenariel's manager, artist manager. You just surpassed your 1 year anniversary, I believe, working with her.
Yeah.
Congratulations for one.
Thank you.
And it's been really incredible to see her career take off in so many facets, so many verticals, as you can call them. And just in the last year, I mean, you know, the headlines, she, Playboy, Playmate December, she's part of Fenty Savage campaign, the Rihanna Fenty Savage line spring. Campaign. For spring, Victoria Monet video. I mean, she's doing the acting, she's doing the modeling, she's doing music, not to mention 500,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, you know, 20 million streams, on and on and on. Aesop Ferg collab, like all of this stuff. So it's really cool to see now that, like all of this stuff happening during a quarantine, no less, like during lockdown, during COVID, because I know you had like this massive tour lined up at the start of 2020 with Ari Lennox, right? I was gonna say Annie, like Ari Lennox. That was so didn't get to go on that, but I want to back up a little bit because you've only been working with her for a year. Take me to kind of how the relationship started and how the two of you met, and then just this, just how you did this all this year and what all of that entailed, and just kind of how that happened.
Cool. I'll definitely give you a run through. She did actually end up going on tour with Ari Lennox, but it was cut short because it was like right as the pandemic hit the US. So a few dates were canceled, but actually one date was canceled. But I've known Snarielle since 2009. I've known her. We went to high school together. We grew up in Atlanta. We're both from the East Side. So I've known her for over 10 years. She's always wanted to be an actress, a singer, a model. Like when I met her in high school, she was like, I'm going to be on Victoria's Secret's runway. And like, there's no one that's going to tell me otherwise. I'm moving to LA as soon as I graduate from high school and I'm making this happen. And everyone was like, okay, like cool. But we were really cool. I had no idea that I wanted to work in the music industry. So we just stayed friends. She moved to LA, like she said, when she sets her mind to something, she really does it. Cool. I ended up getting a full tuition scholarship to Syracuse, went to Syracuse as an engineering major, actually hated it the first semester, freshman year, decided that I needed to change my major, didn't know what I wanted to do, ended up in this amazing program called the Bandier Program for just music industry studies. So I got a really holistic kind of education around the music business. I was in the arts and sciences school. I was in the performing arts school, the management school. I was in the Whitman School of Journalism. I'm in the Newhouse School of Journalism as well. So I learned about all the different jobs that the music industry has to offer. And I ended up working for a concert promoter my senior year in college called Creative Concerts in Syracuse. And they were throwing the best shows and we're really throwing shows at all of the main venues in the Syracuse area. And it was like a great market for artists that didn't have the budget to hit New York City, but also were like, I don't know if we want to go through the border getting into Canada and having to declare our merch and all this stuff. So Syracuse had incredible shows all the time. I met a tour manager named Chris Patterson, while I was working this venue called Funkin' Waffles, and he was the tour manager for this band called Saint Beauty. And we really hit it off. He was like, if you move back to Atlanta, I'll train you to be a tour manager. And I started.
He's from Atlanta?
Yeah, he was, he was from Virginia, but he lived in Atlanta.
Okay, cool.
He went to Morehouse. Started going on tour once I graduated from college, 2016. And
TMing for Saint Beauty for others? Okay, cool.
Saint Beauty, Deontay Hitchcock, Rhapsody just kind of grew over the next 4 years. But just being on tour, every time I would come to LA, I would hit up Snarielle and be like, yo, dude, like come to the show. Like I'll put you on the list, whatever. Like I just want to hang out with you. Want to see what's going on. So we always stayed in contact that way. And I think it was 2019, just wrapping up Rhapsody's, she was supporting Big Crit on his tour from the South with Love and ended up in LA for like a final date, just randomly. for like the Adult Swim Festival right before Thanksgiving, invited Snariel to that. And she came through with some other homies, and she was just talking to me about what she was going through with, you know, trying to find a manager and like what she's been going through as an artist for the last 4 years, and was just like telling me about the stuff. But I had absolutely no desire to be a manager. Like, I loved where I was as a tour manager, just because it's kind of like touch and go. But after I came back home to Atlanta, she hit me up and was just like, yo, dude, I know you don't want to be a manager, but would you consider managing me? And I was like, give me 2 weeks to think about it. Thought about it and decided, yeah, why not?
So jumping from a tour manager to a manager, I mean, that's a massive jump. I mean, those are two wildly different positions and roles. You know, with tour management, you're dealing with the day-to-day, the what's happening in the moment on the road, advancing shows, putting those day sheets together, a lot of organizational efforts, settling up with the clubs, you know, you're the boots on the ground where the tour's going, and making sure, you know, the entire entourage gets on the bus on time and getting to the next, all of that stuff, right? So now with management, that's much bigger vision. That is where we have to zoom out and we have to plan out the trajectory of the next 5 years, maybe, or something. So tell me about the jump from tour management to then being the head manager, and what that was at the beginning, and how did you two begin the relationship together?
So once I decided, it was like Thanksgiving, I was like, okay, let's do this. I just kind of started a spreadsheet. Like, I'm always making spreadsheets for tour. It helps keep me organized. So I just started like a sheet and was writing down like all of the things that I know about her, figuring out like what I think I can bring to the table, figuring out what I think areas that she needed help with the most, and then just kind of bringing that to her and being like, look, this is what I think I can help you with. This is what I think you need help with. And these are like the expectations that I have. Cool. And just having that back and forth, kind of being like, okay, these are my goals. Like, these are the intentions that I have. This is where I expect to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now. So we just sat down and like outlined everything. And I was like, I think this can work. This could be a good partnership. Also, for me, it really wasn't that big of a jump going from tour management to management. The only, I guess, kind of qualm that I had was, I didn't want to be a manager because it's 365, 24/7. You're fully immersed in this person's life, both professionally and personally. So I was like, I don't know if I want to be that deeply involved with anyone, but this is a relationship. Like, we are, we are dating from on out and committed. So it was really smooth, actually, for the both of us, because we think really similarly. We have a similar background.
Cool.
And I love her. So
yeah, that's awesome. So you came in with goals, expectations. Was that, I guess, did you know enough about where she was at and what her goals were that you could kind of come in and say, this is where I think we can take things? And she was like, yeah. Or she's like, actually, that's totally out, like, different from what my goals are. So maybe we should align here.
No, actually, we were pretty much on the same page. We really usually are like pretty, we're aligned. We're pretty good about it. I'll be like, oh, like, what do you think about this? And she'll be like, oh, yeah, I was thinking this. And I'm like, yeah, bet. I already sent that email. Like, cool. But for her and I think what I was really thinking about was the live side of the business, because that's what I had been working in for the last 4 years. Right. So I was like, from my standpoint, what I'm seeing for Tenariel is this incredible Instagram and social media presence that she has, that she curates herself. And I was like, everyone knows you as this character online, but no one actually knows who you are as a person, because she had done one show in maybe two shows in the last 5 years. So I was like, what we really need to be doing right now is getting you out in front of people. People need to know who you are as a person, know who you are as an artist, because everything that people are seeing and digesting of you is just this very polished character image, you know? So I was like, what I want to do is a show every month for 2020. So that was like the first main goal that I had for her. And she was like, oh, like, I know I need to perform more, but that feels like a little ambitious, but like, I'm completely here for it. So I think, yeah, that was like the first main thing. And we were both.
What was she doing up until that point? Was she working? Did she have other management? Was she self-managed? Was she kind of running it all on her own?
Yeah, it's a combination of those things. She had a few other managers in the past and it didn't work out. Right before she asked me to be her manager, she was talking to this guy from a pretty awesome record label based in Atlanta. And he was basically doing like a trial run with her. And by the end of the trial run, he was like, you know what? Like, I really see you blowing up, but like, I just do not have the capacity to bring you onto the team right now. Because they had just brought another female R&B artist onto the label and they were developing her. So she was just like, this is something that I've been coming up against over and over, where these people are coming to me and saying that they love me, they see the vision, they want to help me execute it. But then when it comes down to actually making that commitment, people were falling short. So it was a combination of that and just her putting things out herself.
Cool. So, so you guys decide to work together. You're still based in Atlanta at this point, and she is in LA. Now, what were the first steps that you kind of took? Because it seems, I guess, how much was already in play and set up, and then how much did kind of you facilitate when you jumped on the team officially?
Yeah, so she had a lot of structures in place. She was on a, she had a publishing deal already. Pardon me, through Kid in the Corner. She was putting out music. She's registered through TuneCore. So she was releasing music on all streaming platforms already, Spotify. She was on SoundCloud, Apple Music, Tidal, everything. So she had a great foundation. Like, her foundation was super solid. What I brought to the table was really just helping her figure out like how she can grow from here and just add on to what she's done thus far. So she had, she has her EP out already, 1111. She was working on other songs that she wants to put out. She was already working on her debut album, which we're trying to put out this year. So there was just like so many moving pieces that she was already like lighting fires under. All I had to do was help her figure out like how to actually just move the ball a little further and just come up with some strategies to get more promotion, get more partnerships, helping her build out a team. So really it's just been me trying to connect all the dots for her.
So, so let's, I mean, let's talk about, some of these headline moments. You know, so the Ari Lennox tour, for instance, tours take a while to get set up and there's a lot of prep and planning and all that stuff. Was that something that you facilitated, or was that something that was already kind of in place when you came on the team?
Yeah, so that was something that I facilitated. It was through my connections that I got her on that tour.
Cool.
I had toured with Ari Lennox, actually, and my friend was her tour manager, is her tour manager, Kiana White, and ended up on tour with Ari at the end of 2019. So right after I met up with Tenariel, decided to start managing her. My mentor, Chris Patterson, was like, hey, Ari Lennox is going out. Like, Kiana is like trying to figure out who is going to be opening up for her. And that was the Europe tour, end of 2019. Yeah. So I tour managed this artist named Rebel Ray. And it went like, the tour was awesome. It was 2 weeks, ended right before Christmas. And it was just great. Like, we clicked with the entire like tour and came back to the US. And I was hearing some buzz about Ari doing another leg of tour after doing the US leg, doing the European leg. And now she was going to hit New Zealand and Australia. So I was hearing about that buzz through some of my contacts in the industry. And I was just talking to Tenariel about like how I want her to perform more. So we had done a show in January, we had done a show in February, and March was coming up, the tour was coming up. So I just hit up Kiana, I hit up Ari Lennox's manager as well, and was just like, hey, I am managing this artist named Chenariel, sent them her socials, and was just like, I would love for her to open up. I think it would be a great duo. These two amazing Black women in R&B, just killing it, both from the South. And they were like, yeah, we're with it. Like, it was really fun. So they were like, yeah, we fuck with you. Oh, sorry. Like, we messed with Chenariel as well. Like, we already actually have heard some buzz about her, and the music that she's been putting out and her socials are amazing. So I literally just vouched for her to friends, essentially. And they were like, yeah, let's do it.
So you hit a really interesting point. You sent her socials. They said her socials are amazing. So let's do it. That's really different than how it would have worked, obviously, 10 years ago and before, where it would have been, you know, the music's amazing. Like, we didn't even talk about the music. So, like, talk me through this process. And is it in just what your experience is these days in what is moving the needle, or what people, what gets people talking, or what do they care about? Like, why did they invite her on the tour based on her Instagram versus her record? Or did they, or was it all of the above? And you just meant, you mentioned it, but like, step me through that process, because like, I've heard both sides of it. I've heard talent buyers and promoters saying, don't send me your Instagram. Like, I need to know what the music sounds like. I want to see you live or something like that, you know? But on the other hand, it's like she got a whole tour basically because of her Instagram. So talk me through that a little bit.
So it was a combination of like her music and her socials. But Chenariel is known for her social presence. She is known for the images that she posts, the shoots that she has. Like, everything is so polished, so curated. And I think that's what caught the eye first. Her music is also incredible, but it's like she has this, she's all about space. And her Instagram is just like, it's so beautiful if you go through it. And it's been beautiful since she's been posting. So I think like for people in general, we are such a visual kind of culture. And I think that if one, your socials don't align with like what your music sounds like, people are less likely to listen to your music, period. Because it's like all of your images, all of your videos, any media is what's going to be like, it's what's going to make people convinced to even go to your Spotify. Because since like, well, at least I'd say for the last 10 years, like people selling music is so hard. It's always been hard, but it's like trying to convince someone to listen to your record. It's just like, why should I listen to this record? Why should I listen to any songs that you put out until I see what you are, you know, until I'm really convinced. So I think honestly, social media is more important than the music. Yeah. It's like the music is the core, but we are flawed.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I mean, I've heard someone say music is the least important thing until you hear it, and then it's the only important thing.
Yeah, and,
it's so sad. Right. And so to get people to that point of actually listening, it takes so much. And you're right. I mean, you know, Instagram has become the new website, the new business card, the new calling card, the new everything.
Yes.
And I mean, it works in her favor because she has such a strong visual and aesthetic understanding of who she is. And that comes across. And being a model and being an actress, I mean, that probably helps. So talk me through some of the other avenues that she pursues. Like, tell me how the Playboy thing came about and what the decisions were around that. Now, Playboy has gone through a major brand shift over the last few years. It's no longer the magazine of Hugh Hefner. And so, like, you know, it took me a minute to when I was kind of looking into when I was doing research for this and looking into Chenariel and I saw Playboy, I'm just like, whoa, like, is this like is this what it, you know, what like what were the decisions beyond that? Because I haven't really paid attention to Playboy in a minute. But then I was looking at it, and I want to read a quote that she said, because she's a Playboy December playmate.
Yes.
And she said, my temple is mine. I'm the only one with autonomy over me. My nudity is not inherently sexual. If I want to pose topless, I'm doing it for myself. It makes me feel beautiful. It empowers me. And that's none of your business. And I thought that was so powerful.
Yeah.
And I loved that that was big and bold in Playboy. And like, that was the statement. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hell yeah, that's great. And it's like, it's almost like women are kind of reclaiming what Playboy had been, and it's kind of shifting and throwing it on its head as it's like, no, it's not that anymore. Now it's women taking over, which seems amazing. So talk me through that a little bit.
First of all, like, it seems like women own sex, women own Playboy these days. And it's actually, it's true in a lot of respects. Like, the entire Playboy team, minus maybe two people out of the like 10 people that I interacted with over email during shoot day and following, were all women, women. There are no men inside of Playboy anymore. So it's all about like just sexual empowerment. It's all about like just female empowerment and just embodying everything that we want to embody as women, and just not dealing with any of the pressures that men place on us and around our bodies. So it has been a complete overhaul of everything that Playboy stands for, and we love it. And that's why we accepted it. In terms of how it came about, they actually reached out to us and they were like, hey, we have a job opportunity that we would like to discuss. And we were like, all right, like, what's the job opportunity? And they're like, we want you to be the December 2020 playmate. And like, and I was like, a job opportunity? This is not a job opportunity. Like, this is huge. They were so casual about it. Like, their team is amazing.
Cool.
The entire staff is awesome. But it was really just like, they saw her social media. They loved what she was doing on Instagram. They loved what she was doing on Twitter. And they were just like, we've seen your evolution and we love what you stand for. Because she had a tweet go viral, I believe in 2018, when everyone, there was so much backlash around her wearing a dress to like the BET Awards, where she wasn't wearing a bra. And people were attacking the way that her breasts were in this dress, and it was just ridiculous. And she put out this tweet that was like, I am not going to change my appearance or have any other, you know, feel any way about how you guys think about me in this dress just because I'm not wearing a bra. Like, you all need to focus on better things, because I'm not going to change my image and who I am to suit your gaze. And that went viral all around the world. And I think that really stood out to Playboy. And that was something that they really wanted to highlight, especially at the end of 2020, which was such an insane year. And just be like, you know what? There's been a lot of craziness going on. There's been a lot of racial tension, but at the end of the day, like, what really matters is people speaking up for themselves and just showing up as their authentic self. And that's what we want to close the year out with. So that's how Tenerio became the Playboy Playmate of December 2020, and still riding
so
on
cool.
that wave.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes sense that you accepted that offer now, knowing the ethos of what Playboy stands for and why she got the offer in the first place, which is almost even more important than the offer itself, is like where they were coming from, which is amazing. And it's really great to hear that that's where Playboy stands right now. And it's great to hear that it's primarily women run. So
for everything.
Absolutely. And then, so the other huge moment, which we haven't even talked about yet, so the Insecure placement, the Insecure sync placement. I mean, Insecure, incredible show, one of my favorites. And it's also very known for its music. And that she had, I think it was the, was it like a season finale?
Season 4, episode 9.
Okay. And but it went crazy on Shazam, because people are trying to figure this out. So step me through that. How did that come to be? Now, this is all preface. Like, you mentioned it in passing, but I want to keep hitting it. She doesn't have a label. Now, she's got a a pub deal, but no label. She's distributing through two companies. You said, so how did the sync placement come from Kid in the Corner, or did it, or how did this happen?
It was just another thing where it's like social media. They reached out actually through her DMs and was like, hey.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I would have thought that was a scam.
Yeah. It was crazy. It was just like, what? She just hit me and was like, yo, like,
yeah.
Someone from Insecure just DM'd me about this. And I was like, send that to me right now.
Right.
But no, they reached out. They were like, yeah, we love your music. We've been hearing some buzz about you. Like, your presence on socials are amazing. We would just love to discuss getting, you know, your song synced in a future episode of Insecure. We didn't know exactly, like, you know, what the scene would be or anything about what the episode would be about. We just knew it would be for this season, second to last season of Insecure. Cool. So the way it came about was very organically. It was all through her efforts, completely independent. So yeah, that was crazy. And the buzz and just like the way that it snowballed into so many other things.
Real quick, I want to let you know about Too Lost. Too Lost is a new distribution company to the space. And let me tell you, I am very impressed with them. I got a full deep dive demo with the founder. And yeah, they're very innovative. And when you come into the distribution space at this stage with how crowded it is, you better be innovative. And they are. Yes, they will get your music out to Spotify, Apple Music, all the places, plus 450 other outlets around the world. They do not take a commission. This is why 300,000 artists and labels have already used them. They've already distributed 7 million songs. They offer payment splitting, and they don't charge your collaborators for this service for the payment splitting. They will just pay your collaborators directly for free. They have publishing administration with BMG, so you know it's legit. A lot of distributors have fallen into trouble with using some other less than legit pub admin services. Well, Too Lost is partnered with BMG. You know it's legit. They offer instant royalty advances. This is something that's very cool. And if you have historical streaming data and you need just a bulk payment up front, they can see how much your music has earned in the past. I'm like, all right, we think we know what you're going to earn in the next 3 years. Here's a check for $100,000 or whatever it will be. And you can just click a button and get that distributed and into your account immediately. They do lyrics and credits distribution for free. They have a very innovative analytics platform where, yes, you will see real-time analytics for Spotify, Apple Music, but also Pandora, Deezer, SoundCloud, and Peloton. They're the only ones that do Peloton. They also have a service where you can search the internet wherever your music is being used, and it will just show you a chart of everywhere, every TikTok video, everywhere, every YouTube video, everywhere your music is possibly being used. I've never seen this before. That was very cool. They'll register you with Sound Exchange, and they have a fraud prevention tool, and they're doing fraud prevention. So if you're worried about your music, you know, getting a bot attack or something like that and getting ripped down, which we've seen is a big issue, they have fraud prevention tools that are better than most other distributors that I have seen. Check out Too Lost. You can just go to toolost.com, use the promo code Ari's Take for 3 months free, and try them out. Let them know what you think.
It was incredible. Mm. That's literally what this job is. It's just like one great opportunity could potentially blow you up into this, just take you to a whole different level as an artist. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'm so many people probably came in through that one sync placement.
Oh,
and that's what's so interesting about sync in general is that syncs, they're weighted so differently based on the opportunity, based on the placement. And some are like a paycheck, you know, it's just like you won't even, nobody is going to discover you through it because it's like in the background when they're in a coffee shop or whatever. But you made a few grand. It's like, okay, cool, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's those kinds of things. But then there's something like when you get placed on something as influential where people are looking to discover music. Yeah. And they've done a really great job of putting not only great music, but independent artists on Insecure, mostly, if not all, Black artists.
Yeah.
Did you see some what was the response? So what does that mean when you get a ton of Shazams? Are you seeing – does that translate into streams on Spotify? Does that translate into follows or DMs or comments on Instagram? Did you get other opportunities from that? What kind of came from that?
Yeah, so there was so much that came from that. That was when the record label started reaching out like crazy. It was an insane time. It was, and it did translate into a ton of streams because everyone was just like, what is Nothing Without You? Like, what is going on? We ended up getting a cosign, one of our colleagues, it was like barely a colleague, like reach out and was like, yo, we want to nominate you for a Grammy for Nothing Without You. Issa Rae's record label, her brand new record label, Radio, was like, let's talk. What else happened?
Issa Rae, the star and creator of Insecure.
Right. Yep.
Yes.
Shout out Issa.
Yep.
So like there was just so many things. I was just completely submerged in emails for the next 3 weeks. She gained like 100,000 followers over the course of the next 3 months. Like it was insane the amount of traffic that she was getting. So it was just like us monitoring her Spotify for Artists, her Apple Music, like all the DSPs. People were going to her YouTube and checking out like her Triller Fest virtual concert. So it was one of like, the first virtual concerts that she had ever done, one of the first to come out just in terms of this whole pandemic and virtual concerts in general. So she was just getting traffic all over the place. And it was really because of that Insecure placement why a lot of other opportunities started to knock on our door.
Is that where are you at with discussions with labels? Was it an intentional decision not to work with a label? Are you focused on staying independent? What's the thought process and discussions that are happening around that?
Yeah, so we're really open right now, completely open to staying independent for as long as possible until we find, you know, the right deal, the right team that really works well with the two of us, because it's really just the two of us. Someone that truly, or a team that really sees her vision, trusts in her creative process and in what she has out thus far. And also just like getting a fair deal. Like everyone, all these major labels want to own, you know, your masters, and, you know, you're trying to negotiate, maybe I can get, you can, you know, own 50% of my masters and I can buy back, you know, those masters later on down the line. They want to own anything that you already released that, you know, you didn't put out when you were signed to them. So it's just like finding a fair deal, finding the right fit, and making sure that you can find some people on the team that will really champion who she is. So we just haven't found that yet. So we're still very much so open, but like she is just, both her and I are so just innovative and creative in our approach. And I'm like, it's 2021, you know, like there's no real rules in the music industry, especially with COVID-19 out here. Like there's nothing that we have to do. There's no formula. So honestly, my idea was, I was like, let's try to figure out a way to go like the venture capitalist route and maybe find an angel investor that's super connected in the music industry that will essentially, you know, work as a label and provide you with capital so you can execute your dreams, and they can own like maybe a minority stake in your masters or whatever. Just figure out a deal that way. But I'm like,
there are a lot of funding options out there right now. I mean, there's a lot of these creative capitalization companies out there, especially the ones that give you advances based on your streaming revenue that don't own anything. I mean, TuneCore does that itself. They have advances where they'll, if you need some upfront capital, they'll look at your previous revenue reports and like, oh, you generate typically, you know, $50,000, $100,000 a year, something like that. If you want that upfront, here it is. And they'll do that. Yeah, look into that. There's also, right, quick tip there. But also other companies like the Music Fund, which we had the founder on our show, they do the exact same thing, slightly different terms. But they will no ownership, just upfront capital. And because streaming can revenue can be so predictable, especially if you look at your previous 12 to 18 months reports, there are a lot of ways to get capital these days that don't require you to give up ownership. So I think that's really smart that you're holding out for that. And that, you know, looking at what are the reasons we want to sign with a label, and the pros and cons, and really laying out those pros and cons, which is important to do, and not just jump at the first deal that comes your way. So that takes a lot of discipline to do that, but it's the smart decision. And I'm curious, have you talked to any of the more hands-on label services distributors, like an InGrooves or an Orchard or an Empire or Human Resources or AWOL or STEM or something like that, which, you know, a little bit more hands-on than TuneCore. They have more services. They take a commission, so no ownership, but a commission, you know, typically anywhere from 10 to 20%. But they offer advances. They offer playlisting support. They offer sometimes they'll even offer some radio if you're getting some big traction. It's like these label services companies are starting to pop up as well, which is like this hybrid. It's like they don't own anything.
Yep.
So they don't, you know, have as much skin in the game. But at the same time, like, you can get out if it's not working. And, you know, it's kind of like the best of both worlds, I find, at sometimes.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're looking into right now. Cool. There's also a service, or there's a company called Platoon, and that's exactly what they are. So we've been talking to them because they have label services, and they will give you capital. They'll help hit you with an advance, and they'll still, you know, promote you. They still have the connections in the music industry. So that is exactly what we're looking into right now, because she would like to get signed in 2021, actually, but, you know, like, it's just not a priority for us. It's like, if the right thing comes our way, the right people come our way, then yes. But I think it's really just kind of like her feeling comfortable at this point. So we also have actually talked to Empire, but I will look into Orchard and some other distributors as well, because I could see us, you know, signing some paperwork this year, but just when it comes to, you know, labels wanting to sign you and they want like a 360 deal, but they don't offer 360 services, it's just like, that's not happening.
Yes. No, absolutely. And that's smart to turn those down, because it's just, there are so many other options out there, and you don't need to give up ownership, for, especially at the level that she's at, and what you guys have created already. Talk to me about Fenty and Fenty Savage, Rihanna. I watched the most recent show, the fashion show, which, if anyone listening has not seen the most recent Fenty show, seriously watch it. That was insane.
That's good music too.
Oh my gosh, the music is amazing. The production, the dancing, just the everyone on it was so incredible.
Why?
Oh my gosh! Like, yeah, it's incredible. And it's such a powerful line, and such a fashion line, and what Rihanna has done with it is so incredible, and just what it stands for, and the models that they had on it, and just like redefining what it means to be a fashion icon, and redefining what beauty can look like, and what it means, and what it should be. Absolutely. And it's so cool what she's done with Fenty. And so tell me how that partnership and relationship came to be. It obviously is very much in line with a lot of what we've been talking about, in what Tenariel stands for and what she's all about. But step me through that, because I think that's a dream job or partnership for many people. Collaboration.
So that actually happened after Playboy. So I'm assuming that they saw Playboy. They've been watching Insecure. They have a lot of, you know, black and brown people on Fenty. Rihanna is super intentional about that. But they reached out to us again, just based on what Tenero has been doing. And it was like, hey, we have a new campaign that we're trying to gear up for, and we would love for Tenero to, you know, be a part of that and model. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we went back and forth, did a little negotiating, and she was like, yeah, this is 100% what I want to do. I love everything about Rihanna. Like, she wants to work with Rihanna just on an artist level as well. So it was just a match made in heaven, really. But yeah, it was just like super easy. The shoot day was great. It happened in 2020. It was a perfect way to kind of wrap up the year right before we started shooting the virtual concert. But she just loves everything that Savage X Fenty stands for. And the fact that it is like considered a high-end brand, but the prices are affordable. You know, they don't adhere to the status quo in any way. They're trying to break, you know, the molds. And that's exactly what we're trying to do as a team as well. So she was just like, this is the perfect like brand to align with. We're trying to turn that into something bigger. So fingers crossed on a, you'll see some brand ambassador things going on in the future. But yeah, it was just one of those things that just perfectly clicked with everything that she is and everything that they are. So
I think, you know, her dream back in high school was to be Victoria's Secret's model. But I think Fenty at this point in the era is that she's reached that dream with a company that I would say is probably more in line and more relevant to what Tenariel is all about. So I think she's reached that dream.
Yeah, we were actually joking about that the other day. I was like, do you remember when you used to talk about how you wanted to be on the Victoria's Secret runway all the time in high school? Right. I was just like, yeah, like Victoria's Secret, like, no shame to them, but like in comparison to the Savage X Fenty, no, can't compare. No.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the virtual concerts, because this is something I watched a bit of the Mama Saturn's virtual concert, the first one, not the Galactica. That has over 4.6 million views on YouTube. And for like a 30 minute live stream, that's like unheard of. I mean, it looks astounding. It looks beautiful and absolutely amazing. Tell me about that and how that came to be. And then talk to me about the latest one, Galactica.
Yeah, so Trillerfest actually reached out to us maybe in March, right after the Ari Lennox tour got cut short. And they were like, hey, we are a concert that's trying to raise money for Music Cares through Grammys. We're just like, all the proceeds are going to go to crews and people that have basically lost jobs in the music industry. So Tenariel is 100% about just helping people. Her brand is all about love and peace and just giving back. So she was like, okay, you know, this is a good opportunity. It was unpaid, which, you know, as a nonprofit, we expected that, but like, it was for such a good cause. And they were like, you know, you can like, everyone is just going to be performing at their house. So like, it doesn't have to be, you know, well-produced or anything. Just, you know, just send us whatever you can and keep it to 20 to 30 minutes. So of course, because Tenariel is who she is, she was like, I'm not doing this at my house. Like, this is going to be a production. Like, she doesn't do anything half-assed. So she talked to one of her friends that was friends with another guy that had this amazing studio in LA, and got like an entire team together. So she got a lighting tech. She got her friend that played keyboard on there, Kyle Almighty. She was with her friend Aiden. Like, it was just like, they literally put together an entire amazing show. And I was still in Atlanta, so I'm just over here like on email, making sure that she gets everything done on time, that like the formatting is correct, like just all the details. And she was like, okay, so I'm gonna do this, and like, I want it to look like this, and just communicate that to them. So she put it together. It came out beautifully. And I was like, this is like a Colors, but like,
that's exactly what I was going to say. It looks like a Colors live. So cool.
So I'm like, we've been reaching out to Colors for like the last 2 years. Like, we've been knocking on their door. Like, I've worked with other, another artist that has done a Colors. So I've been to like their studio in Berlin, but yeah, we were like, we want this to just look incredible. Like everything she does, she just wants to take it to the next level because why not, you know?
Right.
Especially as an independent artist. And I think she just always wants to prove, like, even though we don't have a big budget by any means and everything is coming out of her pocket or my pocket or a combination of the two, like you can make beautiful art with what you have, you know, you don't have to splurge every time. So it's literally just connections and making things work in that respect. And that just really kind of it's a perfect transition into how her virtual concert came about as well. We had been talking about it for months. We were like, you did this awesome virtual concert for Triller Fest, but like you haven't done your own tour. You haven't done your own virtual concert. So we were like, this could be like a beautiful debut, a beautiful thing that you can roll out right after. Well, we wanted to air it on New Year's Day, so January 1st, but it was just like, there's so much that went into the editing the virtual concert and just making sure that everything looked right. Everything sounded great. The coloring was done correctly. You know, it was a great amount of time, all that stuff. So we actually ended up filming that December 4th, which is our 1 year anniversary of me managing her. And we got the venue through one of our homies who had a connection to Red Bull and was talking to Red Bull about it. He's an amazing promoter, Sean Gaynor. And he was like, I have a connection at Red Bull and they love what you're doing and would love to help you like secure a venue. So we secured a venue that way. We came up with the run of show. We came up with all the different like outfits that she wanted to do, the vibe, the feel, everything. A few months in advance, just booked everything. And we literally filmed that entire concert in 4 hours. It was like a 12-hour day, but like to get everything done, it was like, it was a crazy 4 hours, but it was definitely worth it.
And tell me about it. So did, was this, you sell tickets to it or how did this go?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was live like, only? It was. Is there a replay or is it up on YouTube or what's this?
Yeah, so many things.
Yeah.
We sold tickets, so it was like a regular concert. It was $15. Cool. The show was about 42 to 45 minutes with everything, but she was singing for a solid 40 minutes. She had multiple outfit changes. Wow. She had multiple camera angles. She had, it was like a fully produced experience. It was incredible. And we didn't do a live stream, like no live streams, maybe a live stream one day, but like we just didn't want to do a live stream because we were watching other artists perform live, especially me. Like I was watching so many live concerts and I was just like, nothing is really standing out to me. Like my favorite live concert was probably like Amine's back in like August, but it was still kind of just like, this is what I would see if I go and see you live at a venue. And
I'm looking at a screen by doing this and it's like, it's like, how many more Zooms can we possibly deal with?
Well, it's just like, why is everyone doing the same setup? So like, we were just trying to brainstorm how we could make this look as different as possible, as cool as possible, based on, you know, what we're dealing with right now. So we're like, when we actually do go on tour, we're not going to be able to have like this crazy lighting crew and this huge production and be able to travel with this band and like just have everything this way. So we were like, based on the budget that we have, let's make it look sick. Let's make it look like you're literally going to outer space right now. But because of that, it's not going to be live. And I don't think anyone's going to be mad at it. And we're just going to make it so beautiful that $15, like people are going to watch it and be like, $15 was nothing, you know? Wow. So we just wanted to make it look beautiful. We ended up showing it. Originally it was supposed to be a 2-day production, which turned into a 4-day, viewing period. I mean, a 2-day viewing period that turned into 4 days. So, people did have the entire opportunity of the final weekend in January to just, view it. I got you though, if you want to watch, but, okay. We've taken it down. It's not on YouTube because we have plans to pitch it. But it was.
What was the platform that did you? Yeah, how did you give them access to watch it once they bought tickets?
So we use this platform called NoCap, which is like a new startup. They've been around for just over a year, maybe almost 2 years, but they're brand new. Cool. They've only had a couple shows, but they worked with some awesome artists. They worked with G-Eazy, The Dreamers, Tyco, and they just have a really clean interface. They help you put everything together. If you want to live stream, if you want to just have a stream that is pre-recorded, they'll make that happen. It has an awesome live chat. It has allows you to sell merch, sell tickets, host meet and greets through like just partnerships that they have. So they were just another connection that we got through colleagues.
Cool. That, you know, that's one of the, like, one of the good things that is coming out of quarantine and COVID and the pandemic and just the craziness of this year is like these kinds of opportunities where charging $15 for a video, a 40 minute video clip would have seemed unheard of even a year ago, you know? But now, like, because of these platforms that are enabling an enhanced experience with, you know, you're going to get this high production, but with the chat, with the merch, with this backstage, like all of the stuff that's in there, this is a whole new revenue stream for artists out there. And because of that, it forced companies into this virtual space. And you know, the technology was there, but there just weren't incentives necessarily before because every artist was just like, well, we tour. That's how we make money and that's how we're going to do it. But that's really cool. This has been great. I've learned so much. This has been, it's really great to connect with you and hear the story. And congratulations on all the success you've had this last year. It's been a crazy, crazy year and you've really maximized it. And so that's amazing. I have one final question that I ask everybody who comes on the show. What does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
What does it mean to make it? I think making it for me, for us, is just really doing it on our own terms to put out things that she's proud of, whether that is with a label or without one. I think it's just being able to set goals and look back on those goals 5 years later, 10 years later, the stretch of your career, and to be like, yeah, I did everything that I really wanted to. And more. So, yeah.
Felicia Bennett, thank you so much. This has been great.
Thank you, Ari. This was wonderful. Thanks. And like, you pronounced Nariel's name so well. So, like,
thank you. Is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out distrokid.com.